You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. We're now on episode 23. Last time I'd mentioned Emily Miller's new book, Emily Gets Her Gun, But Obama Wants to Take Yours. At the time, I was about halfway through it. Just finished reading it a couple of weekends ago. And now I've given it to my camera lady, Miss BHC, so she can read it as well. I wanted to take some time to actually finish the book before I commented further on it. Emily raises a lot of really good points in her book. She correctly rails against the District of Columbia's absolutely draconian gun laws. And for me to say that, being from San Francisco, I assure you that's saying something. She talks about the absolutely atrocious new laws in the states of New York and Maryland. And, oh, believe you me, these crazy laws are just that. They're crazy. These laws aren't about public safety. They're about confiscation. Don't believe me? Well, maybe you'll believe New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. He even got caught saying it. Uh-huh. Seems to me that Maryland Governor O'Malley's motives are pretty similar. He's right in Bloomberg's camp. I repeat, folks, this is not now about public safety. And judging from the crime rates in Baltimore, New York City, and Washington, D.C., well, heck, the crime rate in L.A., another strongly anti-gun city, it never was about public safety either. These are things that we, the people, need to have our attention drawn to. And so good on Emily for doing it. Unfortunately, she also seems to really despise us. And by us, I mean liberals in this case. Blanket, cross the board. Seriously, it's like a curse word to her or something. And that's really too bad because she includes people, well, like me. She goes on and on about how supposedly we liberals want to take people's guns away. Folks, I'm about as liberal as they come, and I don't see myself wanting to take anybody's gun away. Like I said last time, she and I have met before. I played a small part, along with a whole lot of other people, in helping Emily herself learn how to shoot, and she's far from the only one I've helped out that way. Now, why would I do that if I were anti-Second Amendment? Not sure why she seems to think that people like me are the enemy. But that's how the book's written. Remember, I wanted to give this book a chance. I wanted to read the whole thing before I made any comments. I thought that was only fair. And now I've finished it, and this is what I'm seeing. You know, the really sad part about this? People like us, liberals like us, we're actually her natural allies. You'd think she'd be courting us, because she really does have some important points to make that are worth listening to. Emily's right about how bad the process is for getting a gun legally in the District of Columbia. That's valuable and important info. Instead, though, she pushes plenty of us away from those important and valuable points by, well, quite frankly, insulting us like that. Remember, folks, when I talked before about how many of us in the pro-firearms community end up pushing potential allies away from us? What you just heard me describe is one example. Sad but true, folks, and we got to face it. We've got to do better if we're going to win this. See, I want a lot more Emilys out there to get their guns, too. I want them to understand why it's important that they have the right to do just that if they wish. And that getting your gun is actually a positive thing. Now, let's contrast what we just described with how a fellow named Mr. Philip Van Cleve does it. Mr. Van Cleve is the president of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, the VCDL, of which I am a proud member. Mr. Van Cleve routinely refers to the antis, meaning those who are anti-Second Amendment. he doesn't rail against the liberals, or for that matter, the conservatives. Remember, folks, the Second Amendment is not a partisan issue, but rather a civil right, just like any other civil right. Generally speaking, when we of the VCDL refer to the anti-gunners, well, that's how we refer to them, the anti-gunners. Yeah, there have been a few slip-ups there, yeah, sure, but they've been pretty few and far between. Generally, we do a good job of keeping it nonpartisan. We certainly don't try to alienate people like my dad and me. That matters, folks. I can tell you this for sure. If the VCDL folks had been going on with this invective against us liberals like I hear so often, I would never have joined. I ain't going to pay to get insulted. Folks, you always, always get more bees with honey than with vinegar. This recent issue with Starbucks and the open carry movement is demonstrating that. More bees with honey than with vinegar. Remember that. That was my approach with the Code Pink folks back in December. Likewise, when I talked with those college students about campus carry, we actually had some decent conversations because of it. A little honey goes a long way, folks. I don't know, maybe somehow I can get Emily to look at this through, well, what I personally consider to be a more clear lens. Gotta say, I'm not too sure she'd listen to me at this point, since A, I'm an avowed, proud liberal, and she's a conservative, and a proud one too. And B, well, she's really famous now, let's face it. But even though there's a part of me that's kind of doubtful, there's that other part that's still hopeful. Let's see what happens. I know this, folks. We can't keep pushing potential allies away. Our message is way too important to do that. So, when you go out there and you advocate for the Second Amendment, yeah, it's critically important to have your facts together. You got to know what you're talking about. That's a given. You've also got to present it in a way that gets folks to understand that ultimately we're on their side. We've got to be nice. And that's how we help more Emilys get their guns as well. We'll take a short break for station ID. And then we're going to dissect Mr. Obama's anti-Second Amendment temper tantrum. Oh-ho. Stay tuned.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
We're back, folks. You know, one thing I do have some trouble with is an inconsistent argument, especially when it's deliberate. Politicians do this all the time, of course. See, they think they can get away with it. Well, that recall in Colorado showed otherwise, didn't it? They also think that they're not going to get called on their stuff. And, well, maybe that's true if Diane Sawyer's the interviewer. Well, that's not the case here on the Liberals' Gun Corner. Before, we took apart an Eric Holder speech that he made to the NAACP. This time, we're going to do the same thing with a speech from his boss, President Barack H. Obama. This was the quote-unquote temper tantrum that he threw after the gun restriction bills failed in the Senate earlier this year. Folks, this kind of critical analysis needs to be done because the smear job he's trying to sell to us, the people, is just really bad news. And it's only going to get worse as he and the other antis try to misuse the recent tragic deaths at the Navy Yard to push for more gun restriction. Once again, the bodies weren't even cold yet before the antis started up yet again. What was it Rahm Emanuel said? Never let a good tragedy go to waste? Well, they sure seem to be following that idea, huh? To me, that's spitting on the horrible deaths of those innocent murdered people. So we need to take this strategy of theirs apart and look at it. Let's begin.
A few months ago, in response to too many tragedies, including the shootings of a United States Congresswoman, Gabby Gifford, who's here today, and the murder of 20 innocent school children and their teachers, this country took up the cause of protecting more of our people from gun violence.
Well, Mr. Obama said one thing I actually agree with. One shooting of an innocent person is too many. I think we all agree on that. It's unfortunate that, contrary to what he just said, his administration wants to keep putting those innocent people at risk, though. We'll show you how as this goes on.
Families that know unspeakable grief summon the courage to petition their elected leaders. Not just to honor the memory of their children, but to protect the lives of all of our children.
That statement by itself, I'm okay with. We don't want anything like what happened in Newtown, or for that matter, the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. more recently. We don't want that to ever happen again. The big question is, what do we do that will actually work?
A few minutes ago, a minority in the United States Senate decided it wasn't worth it.
And here we get to the character bashing. Well, Mr. Obama, the destruction of the Constitution is not something I am in favor of. But folks, apparently he is, like some of his predecessors. More on this later.
They blocked common sense gun reforms, even while these families looked on from the Senate gallery.
Yep, here we go. A minority in the Senate. You hear that? A minority in the Senate. Blocking common sense gun reforms. Even as the grieving families were standing and looking. Oh, really? Well, first off, any time a politician says, common sense, whatever, you know it's not common sense. What he was advocating would never have stopped either Newtown or the Navy Yard. But, see, he wants to create a false association in your minds that it would have by trying to link his bad policy to those murdered children. Like I said, shameful of him. Oh, don't worry. It gets worse. Just wait.
By now, it's well known that 90% of the American people support universal background checks that make it harder for a dangerous person to buy a gun. We're talking about convicted felons, people convicted of domestic violence, people with a severe mental illness. 90% of Americans support that idea.
There's an old saying, folks. It goes, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. That 90% that he talks about, looks like it came from two sources. The first was a poll run by Quinnipiac, I think that's how you pronounce it, Quinnipiac University in Connecticut. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I do know this. They're not exactly a bastion of Second Amendment rights. Then there was another poll that said the same thing. Guess where that one came from? The Washington Post and ABC News. Folks, this is a newspaper and a television station, both of which are well known for their anti-Second Amendment bias. Folks, you can get polls to say anything you want. Depends on how you ask the question, the context of the question, the wording of the question. All sorts of things matter. Personally, I'd rather look at the poll that happened recently in Colorado, where two antis got recalled and voted out of their positions. That tells me a lot more right there than some quote-unquote poll from a biased source like the Washington Post or ABC. One other thing. Mr. Obama also conveniently ignores that this universal background check idea would not have stopped Newtown. Wouldn't have stopped Aurora, Colorado either. Wouldn't have stopped Tucson, Arizona, where Gabby Giffords was shot. Wouldn't have stopped Virginia Tech. And it wouldn't have stopped the Navy Yard, for that matter. In all of these cases, folks, the criminal background check took place. Yeah, the very same criminal background check that Mr. Obama is talking about here. But he seems to conveniently overlook that fact. Whoops.
Most Americans think that's already the law. And a few minutes ago, 90% of Democrats in the Senate voted for that idea. But it's not going to happen because 90% of Republicans in the Senate just voted against that idea.
Well, I can tell you that 100% of federal firearms licensees, better known as gun dealers, know good and well that's the law. They can lose their license and even go to jail if they don't follow it. Remember, folks, I work for a gun store, so I know something about this. I remind you that in every one of those cases we just mentioned before, there was a background check. That includes that fella that just shot up the Navy Yard. He passed the background check. And for this bit about the 90% of Democrats voting for his bill, well, duh, of course. They're all Democrats. Naturally, they're going to vote party line. Come on. Darn shame they vote party instead of Constitution like they're supposed to. Not exactly something to be proud of there, Mr. Obama. Yes, I know the Republicans do the same thing, too. Of course they do. But how ironic it is that it was the Republicans. Yeah, I know, the ones who seem to pander to the Confederacy worshippers so often. Those folks. How ironic that we have them to thank for actually sticking by the Constitution here. As Double Duty Radcliffe used to say, ain't that something?
A majority of senators voted yes to protecting more of our citizens with smarter background checks.
I seem to recall a majority of senators voting to support slavery and Jim Crow once upon a time, too. Did mean it was right. If it's against the Constitution, which this is, I don't care how popular you want to claim something is. If you want to amend the Constitution, there is a process for that. You either have a constitutional convention, or you can pass an amendment. The amendment procedure is spelled out very well, folks. I've read the Constitution. It is there. It calls for 2/3 of both chambers of Congress, the House and the Senate, then 3/4 of the individual state legislatures to vote yes for it. We've done it 17 times already, folks, one for each amendment that comes after the Bill of Rights, so don't tell me it can't be done if that's really what you want. We've done it. So, if Mr. Obama believes in popularity contests, well, he better be careful for what he wishes for, because that's how we got all that separate but equal nonsense. It was very popular, and he would never have become president in the first place. Oh, by the way, on top of all this, he's totally wrong anyway. A majority of senators didn't vote for increased safety with so-called smarter, quote-unquote smarter, background checks. That's BS. What actually happened there is a majority of senators voted party line for something that wouldn't have protected anyone against what happened in Newtown, the Navy Yard, Aurora, and so on. That Billy was so hot on, it didn't change the background check. No, it's the same doggone background check. And once again, that very background check was run each of those times. Mr. Obama totally ignoring that fact? Huh. Folks, we call that a lie of omission. Now, I'm not sure about you, but if my parents had ever caught me trying a shenanigan like that, and it is a shenanigan, I'd have definitely been in the doghouse. Big time. Probably would have whooped my butt for lying to them, too. Folks, I'm sure your parents were a lot like mine that way. Well, I sure hope they were anyway. Tell you this, my teachers didn't let me get away with that business either. That didn't fly. And Mr. Obama's repeated lies of omission don't fly with me either. And neither should they with you. These background checks had nothing to do with Newtown or the others we've mentioned here.
But by this continuing distortion of Senate rules, a minority was able to block it from moving forward.
Oh, man, this is rich. Now he's all bent out of shape about a well-known Senate procedure called the filibuster. Just so you know, this is something that Mr. Obama himself once supported wholeheartedly back when he was a senator. That's right. Back when the Republicans were the majority in the Senate, he sure was in favor of that filibuster then. What happened, Barack? You mad because your former colleagues used the rules that you supported to stop a bad bill? Cry me a river, Barry.
I'm going to speak plainly and honestly about what's happened here.
Oh, finally. About time. He sure hasn't so far. This will be a first. Good. Okay, let's hear it. As soon as we get back from our station ID break, that's what we're going to do. See you in a moment. Stick around.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Okay, we're going to continue where we left off. Mr. Obama just said he's going to speak plainly and honestly. Let's see if he actually does. Let's go.
Because the American people are trying to figure out how can something have 90% support and yet not happen.
Oh, well, so much for that honesty part. Oh, there he goes again with that 90% nonsense.
We had a Democrat and a Republican. Both gun owners. Both fierce defenders of our Second Amendment. With A grades from the NRA. Come together and work together to write a common sense compromise on background checks. And I want to thank Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey for their courage in doing that. That was not easy, given their traditional strong support for Second Amendment rights.
Oh, please. Dianne Feinstein's a gun owner, too, with a concealed carry permit in San Francisco, no less. Yeah, try getting one of those. She's had it since, what, the late 1970s, somewhere around there? It doesn't mean that she respects or honors our Second Amendment rights, not for us, the people. Michael Bloomberg's neither a Democrat or a Republican. I understand he's a so-called independent. And he's got a posse of thugs armed to the teeth. And we all know what an anti that Bloomberg is. All sorts of antis have guns or armed bodyguards. But funny thing is, they don't want you to have it, too. Oh, no. And they call that common sense policy? Wow. That's the ultimate in hypocrisy. You know, as my father would say, talk about chutzpah. Please. Oh, and Mr. Obama gets into this both a Democrat and a Republican nonsense. People, remember that Democrats and Republicans voted for that monstrosity called the Patriot Act, too, not so long ago. Folks, I don't care what party you're from. The Second Amendment has nothing whatsoever to do with party. It's a civil right, just like any other. Therefore, for Mr. Obama to try this Democrat-Republican nonsense shows you just what he thinks of your civil rights. Apparently, to him and the rest of the antis, your civil rights are subject to party whims. Those two senators who proposed that bill, they clearly aren't defending the Second Amendment here. Also, what Mr. Obama didn't mention here, this is another one of those lies of omission. This bill was actually pushed by Senator Charles Schumer of New York. This guy's been a major anti-gunner for decades. This is really his bill. He's been pushing it for years. Senators Toomey and Manchin, they were simply the front men this time. And now, turns out Senator Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, is feeling the heat from his constituents from the reports I'm reading. That's why he's scared to push it again. You know, and I'm guessing those A grades from the NRA, bet they're about to disappear too. Bye-bye. Whoops.
As they said, nobody could honestly claim that the package they put together infringed on our Second Amendment rights.
I gotta wonder just what those two senators got promised for saying that, since they both know very well that it isn't true. Of course it's an infringement of our Second Amendment rights.
All it did was extend the same background check rules that already apply to guns purchased from a dealer to guns purchased at gun shows or over the internet.
Whoa there, horsey. Did he just say that it's the same background check? Hold on there. Just a bit ago, he told us that a majority of Democrats were voting for, and I quote, smarter background checks. Yet now he's turning around and contradicting himself. You just heard him say it. You just heard him say it's the same background check. Huh. Plus here's another whopper. He's now telling you that background checks don't happen at gun shows or the purchase of guns over the internet. Now, that's just utter and complete bullcrap. I go to gun shows all the time. I see those Form 4473s being filled out all the time at the gun shows. The Form 4473, that's the background check form. And as far as buying a gun over the internet, that pretty much exclusively applies to out-of-state purchases. I've actually done this, so I can tell you what's involved. That's how I bought the Super Red Hawk 454. That was an over-the-internet purchase. Here's what happened. I paid the selling FFL over the internet with my credit card, just like any other over-the-internet purchase. Guess what else happened? I had to do all that Form 4473 background check business, pay my local FFL the receiving fee to put it in his bound book, make sure that the selling FFL got my receiving FFL's actual license, fax, whatever, all that stuff. So, Mr. Obama is just butt-naked, bald-faced, lying to our faces on this one. Wow.
So 60% of guns are already purchased through a background check system. This would have covered a lot of the guns that are currently outside that system.
Remember what I said earlier about lies, damn lies, and statistics? Well, I did some digging into this 60% of guns bought through a background check statement of his. That, of course, means that 40% aren't bought through a background check. Off the books, they call it. Well, it turns out this figure is from a very old study, about 20 years old. It was done back in, get this, 1993 to 1994. This is, just put this in perspective, this is right as the dot-com boom was starting to come into full swing. This was also right around when the Brady Bill, which called for these background checks, was just starting to come into effect. I was in college at the time. I remember all of this very well. Believe it or not, when the Washington Post, the Post of all publications, got called on its slavish devotion to this very speech from Mr. Obama, get this, someone there at the Washington Post actually did some fact-checking. Turns out that not only is this 60% figure very old and stale, like 20 years, and the laws are different now, but furthermore, it included gifts and inheritances. Like, say, you know, father gives his gun to the sons or whatever. All that stuff. Once you sift through all this kind of business and actually get to the purchases at the gun shows, the purchases at gun shows back in 1994 were, get this, 3.9%. Yeah. It's not 40%. It's not even 4%. Oops. Here's more. The pollsters themselves acknowledge the ambiguity in their numbers. Even the Washington Post themselves gave it what they call two Pinocchios. Pinocchio means level of lying. In other words, lies, damn lies, and statistics. Now, when an anti-Second Amendment newspaper does that, that should tell you something right there, folks. If you want to read the article, and I recommend that you do. It's good reading. Just, you know, do your Google search or whatever for this. The stale claim that 40% of gun sales lack background checks. Just search for that. It should be the first or second link.
Their legislation showed respect for gun owners, and it showed respect for the victims of gun violence.
Wrong again. On the contrary, this bill showed contempt for gun owners. Oh, as well as a crass abuse of the victims of any sort of violence. This bill didn't even attempt to address mental health issues. That was what was at the core of all these shootings.
And Gabby Giffords, by the way, is both. She's a gun owner and a victim of gun violence. She is a Westerner and a moderate. And she supports these background checks.
And now he and the other antis are abusing even Gabby Giffords. That's just wrong. That's just sick, folks, at least to my mind. She is still recovering from a terrible brain injury. I sure hope she continues to recover. I think we all want that. All of us want that. And by the way, given how serious that injury was, remember, this was an incredibly grievous brain injury, folks. She's lucky, absolutely incredibly lucky to be alive. Who knows how that's affected her? This bill wouldn't have stopped Jared Lee Loeffner from shooting her.
He passed the background check.
I could understand her support of this bill if it had actually addressed the root cause for that killer doing what he did to her. That root cause is what we call mental illness, folks. But like we've been saying several times here on the Liberals Gun Corner, this bill didn't do anything about that. Didn't even address it. We're going to take a station ID break and we'll be back.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
Welcome back, folks. There's a lot more of this speech by Mr. Obama, so due to time considerations, we're going to continue the examination of this speech in the next episode. Last time, you heard from a Cuban immigrant named Mr. Manuel Martinez. He told us what it was like living under Castro's Cuba in his testimony to the Oregon State Legislature. He told us that's what it was like without the right to keep and bear arms. If you haven't heard it, I suggest you go back and listen to the last part of the last episode. It's pretty harrowing. Well, we're not letting up. This time, we're going to hear from a young lady from North Korea. We all know North Korea is kinda tough. But this young lady's tale of how she escaped from North Korea to South Korea and the route that she had to take to do so, well, that really tells the story of why we need that last resort that the Second Amendment guarantees for us. Her name is Hinseo Lee. Miss Lee, the floor is yours.
When I was young, I thought my country was the best on the planet. And I grew up singing a song called Nothing to Envy. And I was very proud. In school, we spent a lot of time studying the history of Kim Il-sung, but we never learned much about the outside world. Except that America, South Korea, Japan are the enemies. Although I often wondered about the outside world, I thought I would spend the entire of my life in North Korea until everything suddenly changed. When I was 7 years old, I saw my first public execution. But I thought my life in North Korea was normal. My family was not poor, and myself had never experienced hunger. But one day in 1995, my mom brought home a letter from a Caucasus sister. It read, "When you read this, our five family members will not exist in this world because we haven't eaten for the past day. We are lying on the floor together, and our bodies are so weak, we are waiting to die." I was so shocked. This was the first time I heard that people in my country were suffering. Soon after, when I was walking past the train station, I saw something terrible that still can't erase from my memory. A lifeless woman was lying on the ground, while an emaciated child in her arms just stared helplessly at his mother's face. But nobody helped them because they were so focused on taking care of themselves and their families. A huge famine hit North Korea in the mid-1990s. Ultimately, more than 1 million North Koreans died during the famine, and many only survived by eating grass, bugs, and tree bark. Power outages also become more and more frequent, so everything around me was completely dark at night, except for the sea of lights in China, just across the river from my home. I always wondered why they had lights, but we didn't. This is a satellite picture showing North Korea at night compared to neighbors. This is the Amnok River, which serves as a part of the border between North Korea and China. As you can see, the river can be very narrow at certain points, allowing North Koreans to securely cross. But many die. Sometimes I saw dead bodies floating down the river. I can't reveal many details how I left North Korea, but I only can say that during dark years of the famine, I was sent to China to live with distant relatives. But I only thought that I would be separated from my family for a short time. I could have never imagined that it would take 14 years to live together. In China, it was hard living as a young girl without my family. I had no ideas what life was going to be like as North Korean refugees. But I soon learned it's not only extremely difficult, it's also very dangerous. Since North Korean refugees are considered in China as illegal migrants, so I was living in a constant fear that my identity could be revealed and I'd be repatriated to a horrible fate back in North Korea. One day, my worst nightmare came true when I was caught by the Chinese police and brought to the police station for interrogation. Someone had accused me of being North Korean, so they tested my Chinese language abilities and asked me tons of questions. I was so scared. I thought my heart was going to explode. If anything seemed unnatural, I could be imprisoned and repatriated. I thought my life was over. But I managed to control all the emotions inside me and answer the questions. After they finished questioning me, one officer said to another, "This was a false report. She's not North Korean." And they let me go. It was a miracle. Some North Koreans in China seek asylum in foreign embassies, but many can be caught by the Chinese police and repatriated. This group was so lucky. Even though they were caught, they were eventually released after heavy international pressure. These North Koreans were not so lucky. Every year, countless North Koreans are caught in China and repatriated to North Korea, where they can be tortured, imprisoned, or publicly executed. Even though I was really fortunate to get out, but many of the North Koreans have not been so lucky. It's tragic that North Koreans have to hide their identities and struggle so hard just to survive. Even after learning a new language and getting a job, the whole world can be turned upside down in an instant. That's why after 10 years of hiding my identity, I decided to risk going to South Korea. And I started a new life yet again. Settling down in South Korea was a lot more challenging than I had expected. English was so important in South Korea, so I had to start learning my third language. Also, I realized there was a wide gap between North and South. We are all Korean, but inside we have become very different due to 67 years of division. I even went through an identity crisis. Am I South Korean or North Korean? Where am I from? Who am I? Sadly, there was no country I could proudly call my own. Even though adjusting to life in South Korea was not easy, but I made a plan. I started studying for university entrance exam. Just as I was starting to get used to my new life, I received a shocking phone call. The North Korean authorities intercepted some money that I sent to my family, and as a punishment, my family was going to be forcibly removed to a desolate location in the countryside. They had to get out quickly. So I started planning how to help them escape. North Koreans have to tread incredible distances on the path to freedom. It's almost impossible to cross the border between North Korea and South Korea. So ironically, I took a flight back to China and I had to toll the North Korean border. Since my family couldn't speak Chinese, I had to guide them. Somehow, through more than 2,000 miles in China and then into Southeast Asia. The journey by bus took 1 week, and we were almost caught several times. One time, our bus was stopped and boarded by a Chinese police officer. He took everyone's ID cards and he started asking them questions. Since my family couldn't understand Chinese, I thought my family was going to be arrested. As the Chinese official approached my family, I impulsively stood up and I told him that these are deaf and dumb people that I was chaperoning. He looked at me with suspiciously, but luckily he believed me. We made it all the way to the border of Laos, but I had to spend almost all of my money to bribe the border guards in Laos. But even after we got past the border, my family was arrested and jailed for illegal border crossing. After I paid the fine and bribe, my family was released in 1 month. But soon after, my family was arrested and jailed again in the capital of Laos. This was one of the lowest points in my life. I did everything to get my family get to freedom, and we came so close. But my family was thrown in a jail just a short distance from the South Korean embassy. I went back and forth between the immigration office and the police station, desperately trying to get my family out. But I didn't have enough money to pay bribe or fine anymore. I lost all hope. At the moment, I heard one man's voice ask me, "What's wrong?" I was so surprised that a total stranger cared enough to ask. In my broken English and with a dictionary, I explained the situation, and without hesitating, the man went to the ATM and he paid the rest of money for my family and two other North Koreans to get out of jail. I thanked him with all my heart and I asked him, "Why are you helping me?" "I'm not helping you," he said. "I'm helping North Korean people." I realized that this was a symbolic moment in my life. The kind stranger symbolized new hope for me and the North Korean people when we needed it most. And he showed me the kindness of strangers and the support of the international community are truly the rays of hope when North Korean people need. Eventually, after our long journey, my family and I were reunited in South Korea. But getting to freedom is only half the battle. Many North Koreans are separated from their families, and when they arrive in a new country, they start with little or no money. So we can benefit from international community for education, English language training, job training, and more. We can also act as a bridge between the people inside North Korea and the outside world, because many of us stay in contact with family members still inside, and we send information and money that is helping to change North Korea from inside. I've been so lucky, received so much help and inspiration in my life, so I want to help give aspiring North Koreans a chance to prosper with international support. I'm confident they will see more and more North Koreans succeeding all over the world, including the TED stage. Thank you.
I hope you listened well to what she had to say. Again, you can't see the video, but Miss Lee was on the verge of tears describing how her family members had starved to death. All she wanted was something really simple, something we take for granted here in this country. Liberty. Freedom. That's all her family wanted, too. What you just heard is what happens when only the police have the guns. The Founding Fathers knew this. North Korea and China are the real-life examples of what can happen when the people cannot defend themselves. You just heard it. Makes you kind of wonder about what the NSA has been doing for the last several years here in this country, doesn't it? Remember, folks, when we speak of the Second Amendment, we're not talking about hunting or sport. We're talking about what the key to freedom is. It's the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you're at the mercy of those who would do you harm or put you away. And the tools for that are guns. This is Cowboy T signing off. Till next time. Till then, safe shooting, keep practicing, and thanks for listening.